Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and of course, Brad Chester.
This guy.
All right, so Brad, heresy is risen. Where are we today?
We've got Horus, fully corrupted, determined to do anything for the greater good. He's going to do any bad act. Betraying his brothers is now okay. We've got three.
Horus plus three.
Yeah. They're plotting on how they're going to get more, but they're also plotting on how they're going to get rid of anybody that's not loyal to him specifically in the Legion. So effectively, he only wants the people that are corrupted, but it's more the people that are only willing to do anything that their Primarch says. He wants to weed it out to have only the most fanatical, because they're going to do some bad shit and they're going to really rationalize the crap out of it. they're basically saying, well, we have to do this horrible thing, and then we're going to do the next horrible thing. And they got to have people that are willing to rationalize their terrible behaviors, or in the case of the world eaters, just tell them to do stuff, because they were already going to do some terrible shit.
World eaters are going to world eater.
Yeah. We want you to do this. Oh, that's too far.
You're already doing it?
Yeah.
Oh. All right. Well, do you want any direction?
No.
Okay.
No.
On your own. Cool.
Oh, cool. Right. You guys are going to murder people already? Yeah, cool.
Good to you. So we're going to start here with Istvan III. This is what I was just talking about. Horus needs to purge his legions. We've got a certain number of... So the one interesting thing about this is that the legions come from multiple places originally. Once the Primarchs were discovered and they began conquering planets, they built their own little sections of the galaxy that their space marines would come from. But initially, a lot of them actually came from Terra. And a lot of them were actually... The Emperor found them, infused them with the Primarch's gene seed, and then made them part of the Legion. Those soldiers are exceptionally loyal to the Emperor and Terra. So we got a little bit of a challenge here. So as Horus or as Fulgrim or Mortarion, as a leader, I have to get these guys out of my army. Because if I go and say, I'm going to go attack the Empire, then all of a sudden, like, the captain of one of my spaceships might not be loyal to me, and he might fly the spaceship into the sun, or warn Dad.
Or worse.
Yeah.
Go back and warn Dad. Yeah. Or be a ship that I have to, even best case scenario, be a ship that I have to fight now.
So what Horus realizes is that he's got a clever plan. He does this a lot. And really, Horus is one of the better tacticians in the stories of 40K. I think Gilliman's better, but more so as Gilliman shows up at the 11th
hour. He's bureaucracy, but he's also bureaucracy.
Yeah, true, fair enough. What he decides to do is that this world Istvan III, he tells everyone is in rebellion against the Empire.
Which, by the way, the Istvan system is going to be bad news bears for everyone. But
yeah. So, I mean, Bradley put, was Istvan III in rebellion to the Emperor?
Absolutely not.
What he does is he says, we're going to attack it, and then handpicks who's going down. And it is all of the, what we'll begin referring to now as the loyalists. And all the loyalists are sent down.
And the thing is that in this, though, there is members of the Lodges.
Mm-hmm.
They go down there, and they kind of start figuring out, hey man, everybody's been acting real funky lately. and they start figuring out, hey, I've been really, you know, ostracized by the guys that used to be my closest of my brothers. We never had anything. We shared everything, and all of a sudden I'm not invited, or there was a meeting and weirdly enough I didn't get to go to that one, and now I'm going on this very fishy
expedition.
Yeah.
To go kill a populace. But they do it, and they go down there and they slaughter the people of Istvan and kill.
Because they did not have defense.
There's no defenses. And they didn't know they were coming. And they also were like, we didn't do anything wrong. What's happening? So they begin fighting through, and this is the moment. And now, just as they win, Horus decides to eliminate all of his opposition from orbit with
Virus Bomb. Well, he basically sends down Nukes Plus.
The World Eater virus. Yeah.
It legitimately kills all organic, yes, on the planet. It's to It's when you want to use the planet later and you've got terraforming, so you don't care. Mm-hmm. And you just want to make sure nobody's left there.
Well, it melts all of the organic matter and turns it into methane, mm-hmm. which it then lights on fire. And yeah. so what you get is this thing. First, every living thing dies, and then the entire planet explodes into a ball of fire.
I mean, that's not optimum.
Yeah, I mean, it's efficient. But now we're in one of the cooler parts of the story, which is, as with all good stories, the good guys have a play. And so two players here, Saul Tarvitz and
Garo.
So Tarvitz is from Emperor's Children, so Fulgrim's army.
The perfectionist, how about this? The vain one.
The vain one. And Garo is from Death Guard, so Mortarion's army. And Garo was a loyalist, but couldn't be sent down because he had to get a cybernetic implant in his leg.
And he finds out kind of by chance, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. He had some pretty big plot armor in this book, actually. But
Garo's cool. Garo is
fantastic because Garo has, as well as a lot of the Death Guard, they have a very strict moral code mm-hmm. of what they want to do because of the fact that Mortarion originally came from a planet that had tyrannical rulers. So mm-hmm. he was very against the bully, the tyrant. So he taught his legion to be against that, which Garo is very, very big. To be honest with you, I completely forgot his first name. I just know he's Garo. So Nathaniel Garo.
And Tarvitz. So these two, actually together, they're friends. And so even though they're from different
legions, but the legions used to fight together all the time. I don't know if we've done a good enough job about that. And I apologize for that. Mm-hmm. But the legions consistently were doing joint operations all the time.
Well, and this was because that was the purpose. This is why the emperor made them with different positive attributes. So each of them excelled in different areas. It was designed not to make them all independent bodies, but actually to make it so, well, whatever we're fighting, if we have to go fight someone who's got very good defenses, you know, we're going to bring the Iron Warriors. If we have someone who just has a lot of bodies we have to get through, we're bringing Angron. But usually you wouldn't just have one, you'd have multiple. So maybe we would bring the Iron Warriors to break the defenses, then Angron to go through and do the pieces. This is how these guys all fought. Yep. The Death Guard were a really cool army because they were very controlled. They move
infantry
methodically
based.
And methodically move forward. They would take land, conquer land. And you could imagine partnering them with someone like an Emperor's Children who are a perfectionist that had artillery and all these things, or you partner them up with, you know, the Blood Angels, whoever, to make a combo that's
it's combined armed forces.
It's unbeatable. So these two, Tarvitz and Garo, discover not only kind of in a rather a whirlwind of events, discover A, chaos exists kind of. So our primarchs we've been worshiping have turned against the emperor. They want to kill the emperor. But before that, they want to kill a bunch of our brothers on a fake mission down on this planet.
Well, you got to make the emotional impact right though. Your dad, you just found, is on his way upstairs to shoot you.
Yeah.
And you're not 100% sure why, but you just found out he also did a whole bunch of bad things before he's coming upstairs to do that.
This is coming. And so these two, the hero thing, and they go and they effectively take a ship. And
hired a ship.
I honestly read the book a couple times, and I, in my head, kept calling it the Einstein, and then I was doing my research and realized I missed an S.
It is the Eisenstein, not the Einstein.
Yeah, it's the Eisenstein. So they steal the Eisenstein. One thing that Horus had done, and the people down on the surface thought was odd, was there was no communication with the spaceships. All of these soldiers fighting down on the surface, it was dead air going up. So they assumed that there was radio blockage, whatever it was. It wasn't. It was actually Horus just wasn't telling them anything and letting them fight.
Well, they were also busy murdering all the loyal mm-hmm. ship crew, the actual regular humans, the non-Marines. And they were effectively throwing these guys in a wood chipper, to be honest. But that's pretty much what was happening.
So they decide, so Tarvitz and Garo grab this Eisenstein and they fly down to the surface and they just broadcast a message on the open frequency because that's a thing in sci-fi.
You got to remember, Garvin's also down there.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to Garvin. But they're done. So they send this broadcast out to everybody and say, hey, you're about to be attacked effectively. Take cover. Well,
you're not going to be attacked. They're virus bombing, what it's called, the planet. You need to get underground, not just underground. You need to get underground in a shelter that can withstand nuclear blast plus one.
Yeah. So they fly through. This message goes out. And actually, a lot of the Space Marines do hear it. And they do take shelter. And then the Eisenstein decides to take off and fly back to Earth. And we're going to get back to them in a second, I promise.
On the planet, though, the biggest things, because they have some big fights down there, they have actual chaos-infused things down there. This is why they get, what is chaos? Why am I being attacked by a tentacle monster? Because there was chaos spawn and all these. There was a bunch of Slaanesh-infused things down there from the Emperor's Children. So there's a bunch of things that they're fighting and they've never seen before, which is all this chaos stuff. And also, while you're battling this thing you've never seen before, one of your brothers goes, hey, they're virus bombing the planet. So you've got some serious, it's not a great day. It's not the best day you've ever had.
Duck. So the good news is, for the good guys, is the Space Marines on the planet do take cover. They go, not all of them, but a lot of them do. And then the Eisenstein takes off towards Earth.
It gets horribly beat up.
Oh, we're going to get to there. Oh, I am not going to do a cast on this and not.
I mean, it's a full book, by the way.
They wrote a whole book on it. We're going to do.
The Flight of the Eisenstein is a novel.
And a very good book at that. So we're going to spend some time on this for a lot of very good reasons. So they blow up. Then Angron. Horus realizes that his bombing campaign of his loyalist brethren doesn't go quite to plan. There's a bunch of them alive.
The fact that up just a little bit, Angron was already mad because he wasn't personally allowed to kill everyone on the planet.
Yeah, Angron's plan was, so Horus's plan was, we should preserve our soldiers. We'll trick the loyalists. We'll go down there. They'll fight a bunch of people. They'll die during that. And then we'll bomb them.
You know,
Angron's plan was, why don't you just let me go down there and kill each of them one by one?
I'll punch everybody in the face individually. Also, remember when we said Horus, brilliant tactician? No one's really ever said that about Angron.
Yeah. Angron's tactician is, I am here and I'm going there, and everything between here and there, I'm going to hit with a chainsword. This weird little moment, but this story may not seem important right now, but it speaks to kind of stuff we're going to cover later about some of the challenges that the traitor legions had. And this is, and Angron's a good example of it. So Horus's plan has gone partially to plan, but it's not all the way there. There are still loyalists who are alive on the surface. So what you would normally do in this situation is bomb it again.
Wait them out. They have nowhere to go.
They have nowhere to go. They have no way up.
They're in a legitimate underground bunker.
So just bomb it again. Or if you're Angron, grab a bunch of legions and drop pods and launch yourself down there with all of your guys, with 50 companies, and just go kill the survivors hand to hand.
On a planet that's currently on fire.
Yeah. I mean, again, if they ever make cinematics of this show, this one's got some potential for
look. Yeah, it's going to look pretty goddamn badass. CGI budget's going to be pretty high.
Yeah. But man, is this going to be cool looking. So they launch down. And now, I mean, Angron goes, other people follow. He's not alone in this one. And they begin fighting and killing the loyalists. And the loyalists are fighting back. It effectively turns into hand-to-hand combat. Because to Brad's point, the world's on fire. Like, there's no...
world's on fire and everybody's... there's rubble. It's just destroyed everything. The world's on fire. Everything's destroyed. You were literally fighting guys as you find them, because you jumped over a destroyed building into a wall. Oh, there's 50 guys standing right there. So
go time.
Go time. Yeah, exactly.
And I think one thing I thought we could cover here is a fun little side story. I don't really think it's that important, but it's good. It's Lucius.
Also, go to Warhammer Plus. He has a fantastic cartoon on there right now.
Lucius is a fun side story and a good example of the corruption of chaos. So Lucius is a champion in Emperor's Children.
He's a duelist.
Yeah.
He's an actual, before he came completely into chaos, he was a wildly overconfident duelist that got ruined by multiple people. The reason he gets corrupted is because he suffered back-to-back losses when he hadn't been losing ever before. And they basically went, we will make it so you don't lose anymore. And he was like, gone.
Done.
They're like, hey, you have to stab old ladies in the face. He's like, yeah, I don't care at all.
So Lucius was an interesting one because he was sent down with the loyalists because he was friends with a lot of the loyalists. And Fulgrim didn't think he could trust him. And so he was sent down there to go die. And while down there, he survives a virus bomb.
Well, he also does not do good with all the people that survived.
And turns. So he actually turns while he's there. And I like this story a lot because we talk about the way that these people were being corrupted. This was an individual corruption. It wasn't this thing of, there was no mind control here. Each space marine who joined the traitors, joined the traitors.
Well, also, a lot of these people, Lucius included, the Chaos Gods are persuasive. They are insidious. They individually corrupted a lot of these people. This isn't a Fulgrim overall plan. This is the Chaos Gods individually going to each person and going, what is the thing you most want? He most wanted to be the best. I want to be the best hand-to-hand duelist of all time amongst all my brothers. And they went, cool, got it. I mean, he technically has never lost ever again.
The reason the Lucius story is interesting is that Lucius is standing with the loyalists, preparing for this attack by the traitors. And the loyalists, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Lucius explodes and attacks them from the inside. So not only did they get betrayed once, but if you happen to be near Lucius, you got betrayed twice.
Yeah, real bummer. The best swordsman you know has just decided to start cutting people down.
Yeah, and he just cuts and cuts and cuts. Eventually, this all results in Horus does kill the rest. He is able to convince Angron to leave.
Weirdly enough, a couple rando people survive.
Yeah.
Because, they get buried beneath rubble and everything else. They accidentally don't kill people, but mainly because a building fell on them.
And they couldn't get to him. But he bombs them again from space. He does eventually do what he wanted to do, which is bomb them again from space. So the other thing that's kind of cool about this is that we're now talking about tens of thousands have died all at once. And the virus bomb, billions, but actually trillions have died. An entire planet has suddenly died. What this does, which actually helps Horus out, is it actually makes the warp unstable.
Which they have retconned twice.
I know.
So I'll just go with what my favorite theory is what the Chaos Gods are helping Horus out by making the warp unstable. That is not the full canon, but it makes the most sense, is that if any time right now the Emperor finds out what's actually happening, he signals the rest of his brothers, stops the corruption, stops what's happening, and none of this goes down.
I took it as that level of death, violence. Because the virus bomb is going to feed Nurgle because it's plague.
It's both.
Torn from the violence.
But I'm saying, my take, and you can take this anything, but that's the problem, is we've had multiple stories about why. Because this is, again, 40 years in the making of the same story that's been added on.
Yeah.
So this is, I agree with what you just said and also what I just said.
Yeah, because everyone's right. That's a
beauty. It powers you up. It powers them up to do what I was saying, but like the sheer body count in the first place can do all this stuff.
Exactly. And I think what happens, it makes this important, is that this now clouds the warp. And so this...
Well, that's the biggest thing. Is they can't... Again, if there's real communication, all of this goes down right now.
Yeah, immediately the Emperor is aware there has been a revolution and Horus is done. So now Horus is actually shielded. No one knows this is happening. If you want to go tell the Emperor that Horus turned on him, you have to go physically tell the Emperor.
But you also have to find out that it's happening.
Or you could try and pierce through the psychic barrier around him and then... Good job, Magnus. Jeez.
But also, this leads us to... Well, I guess we flight before us, the drop zone massacre.
Yeah, because it's actually happened before. So
that's true.
So going back to what we were talking about earlier with Garrow and the loyalists on the Eisenstein, now they have come out of Istvan 3 and they try sending a message to Earth and it just doesn't go anywhere. They realize pretty quickly that's not going to work and they need to go. They also at this point have to deal with a little problem on their ship in that they commandeered this ship, but unlike Horus, they didn't do a little like stat check on everyone on board. Say, hey, you guys are with us, right?
Yeah. So about half the ship's not.
Yeah. So he's actually, they're on a spaceship in a war zone where everyone's pissed off and half his spaceship is traitors. So there's an issue here.
Who, they're not even, but we have backed that up. They're traitors that think that they are loyal.
Yeah, it's true. So now
you've that got, is that is the, this. You got to remember that's the narrative.
Spy
right?
versus spy.
What's well, the narrative is that we are actually the ones fighting for our fellow brothers. Yeah. You are the one fighting against it.
So on this ship, they get attacked by the other half of the ship. Effectively, their astropath actually gets killed, and
that's why they can't get back to Terra.
They have a whole fight, and this giant fight breaks out within the ship. And I wish about the ship's not static. This ship is moving. It's moving towards planet through atmosphere, doing all this stuff. So this story we're talking about happens in, I don't know, 5 minutes, 6 minutes of absolute chaos.
We'll be right back after a quick break. It's time to accept it. The holidays are upon us, and finding gifts for people is never easy or really fun. Luckily, we at the 40K Lorecast have a new sponsor, which will help you make your holiday shopping fast and easy. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go there and buy the game Fart Bingo? Yeah, I did. Is it for my child to play with his friends? We'll go with, yeah. At the same time, I was able to get a cocktail smoker. So yeah, those are probably all for me. Anyway, that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items this holiday season. You'll find thousands of gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore, 40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
The battle breaks out.
I literally turned away from my microphone for this.
Yeah.
I love that we set off a bomb on the ship. And the next line that John put up is, super good idea.
Always good to have your gunfight around the World Eater bombs. It's like, if you want to duck for cover, nothing quite like a giant thing of TNT to hide behind. So they're having their fight, and eventually the fight ends up in the bombing bay, because again, that's where you go to fight. And a stray bolter bullet, again, I promise you, if you read the books, most of them are good. Some of them are kind of like, oh, come on, man, it's just lame. But anyway, all of the traitors happen to be in the bomber bay fighting the loyalists, and someone shoots the propane tank, which starts a whizzing sound, and the one hero jumps on the airlock and hits it. And
closes it, and everybody goes.
And everyone gets killed by the virus eater bomb, and the ship is able to move on. But we're not done yet, because now they enter orbit. And once they're up in orbit, the Terminus Est battle cruiser, which is
Typhus's ship.
Yeah, so Mortarion's got a right-hand man named Typhus,
who is actually more down with Nurgle than Mortarion is.
Oh, so much more. Typhus was all in on this one. Yeah. Typhus is
for some unknown reason, Typhus went Lord of Decay. I'm in.
Yeah, this is
everybody fantastic. Else had to be tricked. He was like, this sounds great.
This sounds fun. I'm just doing this now. So they now on their again, it's not a tiny ship, the Eisenstein, but compared to a battlecruiser.
Oh, he gets to dock the ship.
This is a Star Destroyer versus the Millennium Falcon, but it's a slower Millennium Falcon and not as cool. But so they now come out, and immediately Typhus just starts shooting at it. And it says, we're blowing this thing out of the sky. And
they take catastrophic damage. Yeah.
They do the whole, jump to warp, I don't care where.
They went in a random direction.
Boom, get me into the warp.
They also have no one to guide them. They just went, we're going to go that way.
And
cool.
They went into the warp. They jump into the warp, and they're in the warp. I mean, it's like rudderless, directionless, moving. But more importantly, their Geller field has failed.
Yep.
And the Emperor did not tell anyone what's in the warp. So these guys are in the warp and they're getting told where our Geller field is down. And they go, so, Brad, why is it bad when a Geller field is down?
Because the demons have free reign inside your space now. It used to be your private space. It is now very public space. And the public is real shitty.
So now we're starting to see, and this is kind of where the story gets really cool. We start getting all these things that are commonplace in what we would call 40K. But now this is their first experience. This is the first Plague Marines appear.
Well, they also made, if you've ever role played or you've ever written a get a wish from a genie or anything like that.
Oh yeah.
Always read the fine print. Cause while they're in the warp, they get a horrible rotting disease. And Nurgle comes in and says, I can totally help you out. And they go, I will do whatever it takes to not die from this disease. And he goes, no problem. You won't die from the disease. And they don't. The disease doesn't go away. They just don't die from it. Yeah. They horribly suffer from the disease and they continue to suffer from the disease, but they are effectively never going to die specifically from the disease. And they can pass the disease on to others. So they are this bloated, I want to not undersell that. They are such a bloated carcass inside their armor. Imagine a suit of, I mean, it's power armor, but it is, you are so bloated, you are busting out.
I mean, everyone see, if you've never seen, again, if you're new to 40K, we've all seen a knight in armor.
Yeah.
Imagine that armor bursting from the inside with like pustules coming out of it, just a purple, blue colors, everything.
With such force that it's busting out of futuristic sealed space armor. There's no in and out of anything. You're blowing that out.
And by the way, you're also, the thing about that is super angry. So if you're not one of these things, that thing's coming to kill you.
Yeah, you're not super excited that one of your guys made a deal with a chaos entity and now you would like to die, but you can't.
And so now that thing is fighting you. So Garrow and the other loyalists are stuck on this ship fighting possessed space marines, and they're losing. The space marines.
It's a big thing marines. On this. You have a good note on this, but I want to throw out, they eventually realize that if they stay in the warp anymore, they have no chance.
Yep.
Because the warp is actually fueling more and more and making them actually more powerful.
So Garrow then realizes his only chance is to leave, is to come out. So they just drop out of the warp.
But they're also in the middle of nowhere.
Middle of nowhere.
With a busted ship and a bunch of effectively zombified. They're not even zombified. They're just non-dying play. Yeah. These are guys.
Invincible.
Effectively, yeah.
Invincible death warriors.
Yeah, they were literally in the books. They're just putting unbelievable amounts of bolter shots into people's faces and everything else.
And they're just not caring.
Whatever.
So, but luckily, as soon as they drop out of the warp, they're able to kill them. Once they get out of the warp, Nurgle's power is not strong enough. And now they become like just diseased space marines. And they're able to kill them. So they kill them. But they're still, as Brad just said, kind of in the middle of nowhere.
With a broken ship.
The broken ship. And Garrow again. Actually, we should circle back on this. We've talked about this before. The Primarchs are incredible. Even a regular space marine is a genius. They are tactically geniuses. They're able to diagnose situations and come up with solutions. That's what makes them so powerful. It's not that they're just bigger and stronger and faster than everybody else. They're smarter than everybody.
Well, they can also take in more information than a normal person. Like by 100 times, you can give them orbital relay information, everything that's happening on the planet, everything else, and they, boom.
Right. Just like a regular space marine, not a Primarch, a regular space marine.
Guys, yes.
So Garrow realizes that they can't go back into the warp, obviously. They're thousands of light years from where they need to be. They have no communication. What are we going to do? So he decides to blow up one of his warp drives, just overloads it, kicks it out of the ship, and it blows up. Because a blowing up warp drive, everyone can see. The entire universe can see. And Brad's favorite Primarch is watching, and Rogel Dorn,
and he does exactly what you expect him to do. Be a dick. We're trying to warn you of something happening. We barely made it out alive. We're fighting for our lives the whole time. What's Rogel Dorn do? Nah, I don't really believe you.
What if I just throw you all in prison? So Rogel grabs...
Without even letting you tell your story.
Yeah, Rogel just grabs the whole ship, throws them all on the brig of his ship, blows up the Eisenstein, so that thing's gone, and jumps...
That's true, I forgot about that. Yeah. Stinks.
Just blows it up. He's like, no, that thing's gone. And jumps, but he won't take them back to Earth to see the Emperor. He takes them to Luna, which we all know it's the moon. But he takes them because a giant fortress on Luna. It takes them there, and then gets super butthurt when he's told that his brother is all turned on the Emperor. I mean, Brad loves Rogel, so I'll let Brad discuss how cool Rogel was at this.
He legitimately had every single information. Also, all of the information is on the ship. You could have said, hey, what happened? These supercomputers that are literally sentient, basically, could have told you everything. Instead, you're going to have me verbally tell you a story that you could have confirmed instantaneously.
Oh, look, there's the video footage of the Plague Marine.
Also, you could have sent a message to the Emperor so long ago if you would have just paid any attention.
Luckily, eventually... Rogel does come around and decides to go tell the Emperor, who believes him instantly. And
because of, you know, the overwhelming evidence.
Yeah.
And again, the basically futuristic black box on the plane, which says it confirms every single thing we've said. You're like, you could have just looked at that, you know, instantaneously. But sorry, Imperial Fist fans, I hate Rogel Dorn so much.
Now, the cool thing is we're going to stop talking about Garrow now, but don't worry. He comes back up later.
For a lot, actually.
A lot. So, like, these guys, the reason we did a sidetrack there into somebody, and now we're not going to talk about him for a little bit, but don't worry. He's coming back hard in the near future. So, Horus now, we're going to jump back to Horus. So, Istvan III is concluded. He's purged his legion. He's purged the...
World leaders are purged.
Yeah, the world leaders... There's no purging of world leaders. World leaders
they killed the one guy.
Exactly. There was Eric. Who was like, hey, guys, I'm not really into this. And they were like, no. So
yeah, we're going to have Eric's, to murder you, Eric.
Eric's gone, but the rest of them are all there. Emperor's children have been purged and Death Guard have been purged. So he has himself, he is effectively, and of course, Lorgar. So Lorgar was pre-purged.
The word bearers were.
The word bearers, yeah, were pre-purged. So he has five legions that are ready to go. They're rocking and rolling. We can do this. Now he needs some more. And he's got to kind of now make a tactical decision. Who does he go and reach out to about, hey, want to go help me kill our dad? And a couple of them, I think, are hard no's.
The Blood Angels are literally led by Space Jesus, so they're probably not going to go anywhere.
Not going.
The Ultramarines are led by the ultimate bureaucrat who would literally bore you into telling you that you're not going. He would also confuse you because he would make it you believe that you were wrong the entire time to even talk about it.
So those two are right out. And there's another one, which is always kind of funny.
Like the Lions, whoopsie.
The Lion is totally loyal, 100% loyal here.
Lion, and he thinks everybody else is good. Actually, everybody else with him is good. Yes. Things at home don't go well. His adopted dad, Luther, yikes.
Oh, we're going to get there.
But
Horus makes this call. Blood Angels, Ultramarines, Dark Angels.
No way.
No way. They're not getting them.
And then makes some pretty easy calls. He goes, does the Legion led by the psycho killer that drafted only prison sociopath murderers is going to turn to chaos? Good call. They weirdly were super okay with it.
Yeah.
Big shock. He got... My favorite turd, Perturabo of the Iron Warriors, who hates Rogel Dorn so much.
Which he realized he couldn't turn. So we should mention Rogel Dorn and Khan were too close to Earth. So he had no way to contact
him.
So, he had to go.
What else? I give Rogel Dorn a lot of
Rogel wouldn't have turned.
But Rogel Dorn is literally the paladin. That guy is like firmly, his intelligence is 4, but he has maxed all his other stats. Also, he's kind of a badass also.
So if you're not going to get Rogel Dorn, you automatically get Perdurabo.
Well, let's be honest. One is a siege master and one is a fortification master. Yeah. And one talks so much shit to the other one. So Perdurabo went, which side's Rogel on? Almost effectively to his face. Yeah. It's just like, you can try to attack me right now, I'll just run away. But exactly. Like, if he's on the other side, I'm in. Yeah.
And then, of course, Alpha Legion, who are...
Well, that one's tarred, though. Because, talk about retcon. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Alpharius has a twin brother. One of them is still alive. And you can argue with me about it, because there's been four different stories, and there is a particular canon. But
no one knew that they were identical twins.
Exactly.
So you don't know which... At this point, no one knows that there's two of them, but they also, we don't even know from a story standpoint who said what to who. Like, we don't know who
was with Horus. One of them supposedly was loyal, and one of them was not.
So right now, Alpha Legion comes over, Iron Warriors and Night Lords. The Thousand Sons, and we're going to get to them in a second. They came over in a bit of a weird way, but he's got these guys. The challenge Horus has is...
They came over in a weird way after Leben Russ baned Magnus over his knee.
They can't remember in the sense that, like, the Thousand Sons weren't necessarily, and we're going to tell that story in a second, guys, so hold on, we'll feed you. But the issue right now that he does have is he's got Raven Guard, Salamanders, Iron Hands, and Space Wolves. Space Wolves, Leben was never coming over.
No.
And I don't believe he was getting...
Salamanders, you're never going to get Vulcan. Vulcan is the only good guy in the entirety of Imperium.
And Korax is... Actually, we're going to go over how much of a badass Korax is pretty
he's shortly. An invisible ninja assassin that's also a demon primarch. But
kind of one of the coolest acts of betrayal that Horus does is Marks. We discussed before, one of the only ways that the Emperor was able to stretch into the Great Crusade was the deal he made with Mars. He goes to Mars. Mars is this planet that's actually really a factory.
It's a planet factory.
It makes...
And they worship... The things they make, basically.
Yeah, they make spaceships. They make weapons. They make everything.
Yeah, and the Adeptus Mechanicus is Mars.
Yeah. And so the Emperor makes a deal with them. The deal he makes with them is, if you provide my army, or my empire with equipment and all this stuff, I will help find you more technology. I will give you technology. And so that is their deal. Horus knows of this deal, but what Horus also knows is that the Emperor is lying, that the Emperor knows how dangerous some of this technology is and won't give it all to
him. He was alive during that time, and he's also a dick.
Yeah, exactly. So Horus knows this, and so what Horus realizes that if he got Mars on his side, now he has all the weapons, which is a good, when you're waging war, pretty good to
seems,
have weapons.
Seems strong to
yeah,
have
it feels strong. Like, if I have all the weapons and my opponent has pointy sticks... See conquistadors.
Didn't work out well.
Horus does this trick where he reaches out to Kelbor, who's one of his Admech liaisons, and he sends him back to Mars and tells him, and with a gift, it's an STC. He presents it to Fabricator of Mars and says,
STC is the device back from the old times that could effectively create anything.
And this is the thing Admech care about more than anything.
Yes.
These are what
it is the holy grail.
They only want STCs. And so for Horus to just have one creates a bit of a problem, because the deal the Emperor made with Admech was that they got all of these. So why does Horus have one?
And why have we never gotten any?
Yeah.
Not one.
Horus makes a deal with them and says, look, the Emperor's been lying to you. Just like he's the same way he's convinced everybody. He's been lying to you. I will give you this STC, and I will give you more of them. Not only that, but I'll also remove the Emperor's restriction of using AI.
Which they are huge. By the way, they worship that. So
needless to say, Mars goes, yep, we're in. And the Emperor loses a planet in his own solar system and maybe the most important production facility in the world.
Laughably.
So now, though, the Emperor knows. He knows he's been betrayed, and Emperor is going to react. Luckily for Horus, at this stage, Lorgar is still somewhat useful.
Well, I do like our line here. So he knows he's been found out. Horus knows he has to get rid of some people fast, or he's not going to be, because he needs to push now.
Yeah, this is go time. Yeah.
Well, he also doesn't know. We have, again, millions of worlds. I know how many Space Marines I have. I don't know how many worlds I'm going to have. I might just lose to, like right now, if you play Imperial Guard, I might lose to the endless hordes of guardsmen.
Yes.
So he has to go, and he has to go to Terra, and he has to do it now. Yes. How's he going to go about doing that? He needs to lose some Space Marines that aren't with him. And he lays traps. He lays about, actually, he lays double-digit traps. Like, there's book-wise.
It's constant traps, actually.
But it's all, but the thing is that Horus actually lays double-digit giant schemes that all go at the same time. He makes Kaiser Soze look like he's not very much. Like, just all of, there's multiple novels.
How old we are that we both reference Kaiser Soze. Like,
you're welcome.
That was a great movie when I was in high school, right? All of you in high school? Oh, your parents hadn't met yet. Awesome.
He sets up trap after trap after trap. And all of these are set to literally go off at the same time. Because again, we still have communications problems, but people don't know why we, right now, we have no idea why we have communications problems. And then we're about to have what's known as the drop site massacre.
Yeah. So before the drop site massacre is Istvan 5. So we were on Istvan 3 last time. Word has gotten out. Horus has turned against the Emperor. And word goes to all the Primarchs, go kill Horus. In secret, though, right before, as this is all happening, right before, it's not clear in a timeline, but Lorgar brings Alpharius, Pederabo, and Conrad Kruz onto his ship and explains to them what Horus is doing. Horus is turning on the Emperor.
To save them.
To save them. And they are all given the sales pitch. As we discussed, Pederabo just went, where's Rorgul Dorn? It's with the Emperor. Cool, I'm with you. Conrad Kurz is a psychopath who goes, you want me to murder people? Yeah,
I was going to do that anyway.
And then Alpharius just kind of says, sure, maybe.
And we don't know if he had fingers crossed what he did.
It gets a little bit this, but effectively, Emperor doesn't deserve their loyalty. Empire is built in deceit, blah, 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 blah. So they agree to turn traitor, but no one knows this. So as far as the Imperium is concerned, our traitor legions are Luna Wolves, who have now changed their names to the Sons of Horus, Death Guard, Emperor's Children, and of course the Word Bearers. They know this.
And World Eaters.
And the World Eaters, of course. So now the Salamanders, the Iron Hands, and the Raven Guard are coming in to attack. Oh, these guys are all hanging out on a planet. Let's go down to that planet to fight
them. They're weirdly standing on this X.
Somewhere. Yeah, there's just this X thing with a big like welcoming parade for us to attack. Definitely not a trap.
They were supposed to basically vanguard push, and then they were going to be supported by the brothers. And one of the reason it actually made a little bit of sense is one of the brothers was the Iron Warriors, who are siege masters. So, hey, you give me some space and I will set up and I will take down all their defenses. You go over there first.
So they do. This is going to hurt Brad, I'm sure, because he really loves himself some Salamanders. But the Salamanders
get flatlined like nobody's business.
So they all land and they just start tearing through. I mean, this is the difference is with the exception of the World Eaters, there is an anger in the Salamanders and the Iron Hands and the Raven Guard. There was genuine
they got betrayed, anger. Which is one of the reasons why it actually makes sense that they fell to this, because they felt so betrayed that they're beyond logic. They are basically striking out in vengeance, and they're angry because their actual brothers have betrayed them.
Yeah, and killed them. I mean, not just betrayed. Remember, they're not getting a notification that Horus says he's against the Emperor. They find out that Horus killed his own soldiers, his own gene seed.
Also, the books are well worth reading because there is a bunch of chapters which are dedicated to how badass the Primarchs are.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're going to get into Korax just being king of fight.
Korax is doing stuff, but Vulcan is literally being a giant with a hammer.
Just sledgehammering space marines.
He looks like Sauron at the beginning, and he's just
boom.
Just knocking waves of guys.
And so they are just ripping through the traitor legions. And as they're doing this, Alpha Legion, Iron Warriors, and the Night Lords.
The reinforcements. Yeah,
the reinforcements have landed. So now they've fought. The traitors have actually started retreating. And we've now, is the Urgal Depression, we have secured it. Cool, our buddies are here. go get them, Iron Warriors. And what happens next, Brad?
Shit goes down. One, Vulcan catches a nuke to the face. So
it was cool.
Like, by the way, I'm not actually like, ha ha, funny. I'm not making fun. He literally takes a nuke, ground zero, to his head.
It disappears. Now the attack comes from the new traitors are attacking. And then, of course, the old traitors come just hurtling towards them. And so now they're trapped. You've got the loyalists. They're between. They could not be in a worse position. They are actually, to quote Star Wars, they have the low ground, not the high ground. They're being shot down on by siege masters.
And again, certain part, because they're pretty spread apart. I know this sounds like one big, like, tight battle, right, but it's planet-wide, which is, again, why Vulcan took a nuke.
Yeah.
A legitimate nuke. He was nuke.
Over there.
Yeah. Also, they were kind of like, we don't want to deal with him. Let's hit him with a nuke.
Let's just nuke
him. Ooh, this is the big thing, though. We have to go into this. There's so many people with similar names. The word bearer, Lorgars, the guy that initially started this, shows up with his legion, but his legion has secretly been just accepting demons
into them.
So they are the first possessed Marines, which they are Marines, but they have demon souls inside them, which makes them faster, stronger, able to cut through armor like butter, basically. Yeah,
with their hands, they're called the Galvorbach, is the term that they use for them. And they are just lightning fast, and they start ripping through the Space Marines. However, they're not Primarch fast.
And Ninja Warrior.
Ninja Warrior Primarch.
Primarch of the Raven Guard effectively starts doing killer combos on everybody.
And just begins just slaughtering them. So again, your back's to the wall, it's time to fight. And Korax just starts slaughtering these, what were supposed to be perfect soldiers.
Wave after wave.
Just like it's nothing. And then Lorgar, and that's the only way to probably pronounce his name, by the way, is Lorgar, gets upset that his possessed brothers are getting killed and decides to jump in and fight.
Sorry, Korax. Wordbearer fans, but Korax beats him down like a red
like step shot.
It's like explodes
him. Korax has been fighting for like 22 hours at this point, is fighting demon infused Space Marines, kills them. A Primarch shows up and he just beats him silly like it's nothing.
He does a Hulk on Loki on it. It isn't a close fight. He pummels him.
Only to be saved by Korax's weird vampire cousin, Conrad Cruz, jumps in.
Who, even though he's a super weirdo, the Night Hunter is a badass.
Oh, he can fight. He's just
super weird.
Yeah, it's like, because, well, I mean, my viewpoint is I always thought Korax was kind of goth, whereas, like, Cruz is actually a vampire.
Yeah.
Because, like,
he's a super weirdo.
Yeah, I'm actually a vampire.
Also, read his book. It's fantastic.
Oh, it's great.
It's Alien in 40K. Yeah.
So Kurz jumps in, and then at this point, Korax has to
fly. Well, okay, we got to back up a little bit here. The gene seed basically is what makes Marines, and they have to, it's an actual gland in the Marines that they make other Marines from, and he's worried that I will not have a legion. I won't have a chapter. I won't have a barbershop quartet at the end of this.
Yeah. Me and everyone I care about is about to die.
Yeah. So he grabs some bros and literally gets out of here. And we're talking, I can't even remember what the number is. I think it's like 50 or something.
Yeah, it's tiny. So he then runs away, so to speak. I mean, but again, when we say runs away, he runs away on the planet that's surrounded by his enemies and are hunting to kill him. At the same time that this is all going down, for the other Marines who are stuck out there, Mortarion, Angron, and Horus end up planet side. And they brought some Titans with them.
And the thing is like, while this is all going on, a ton of people still don't know what the hell's happening.
Yeah.
Because they think they're supposed to be battling X, and Y, Z, and Alpha have all shown up, and they don't know who's supposed to be fighting who? Who's elite? Who's fighting with me? Who's not? There's actually tons of parts of the story where these guys because the communications were jammed and they're running back to Iron Warriors going, hey, these we got attacked by so-and-so. They're like, man, that's a bummer. And then they get shot in the face. You're just like, oh man, this is the worst way ever to die.
So I like calling out some of the firsts that happened here. And so we get a cool first here. And the first is the death of a Primarch.
Well, it's not even the death of a Primarch. It's the death of a Primarch by the hand of his best friend.
So I'll let Brad spend some time here explaining the friendship between Ferris Manus and Fulgrim
were legitimately like tighter than anybody else. They were the best of friends. They did things together. Ferris Manus made Fulgrim's weapons. This is my finest craftsmanship. This is one of the best. Weirdly enough, the Primarch of the Iron Hands has iron hands.
Every now and then you just have your...
But he's a forge master. Mm-hmm. I mean, not as good as Vulcan. But... I have some favorites here, everyone.
It's fine.
So these guys are Titus of Titus. I'm pretty sure they've been on more engagements and worlds together than any of the other Primarchs. They fought side by side for 500 years. And Fulgrim has now went to Chaos. And Ferris Manus actually, before this, is told that Fulgrim went to Chaos and refuses to believe it. It got told by Eldred. There's no chance my best friend and my brother would turn to Chaos. You're saying the sky is pink. You know what I mean? Up is down, down is up. Not a chance. They meet on the field of battle and Ferris won't fight him at first. Like actually won't. And then you get to the point where he realizes that his brother has actually fallen to Chaos, and Fulgrim's trying to turn him at this point in time. And Ferris Manus has none of it. He's still trying to process. Well,
they're both trying to turn each other.
Right.
It's just unfortunately, one of them is more turned than the other. Let's put it that way. I mean, Fulgrim's gone at this point.
Fulgrim's gone, and Ferris doesn't want to fight and wants Fulgrim to come back. I mean, it's actually really sad. You know what I mean? It's a pretty hardcore thing in the book. And they eventually get to the point where Fulgrim does the Star Wars, you know, you're either with me or against me. You either join or I'm going to kill you. And then takes the blades that Ferris created for him, like his personalized weapons that Ferris Manus made for Fulgrim. And
so they begin fighting, and Ferris beats Fulgrim.
Oh, he's dominating.
He just beat him, but he cannot kill him.
And he's got he misses two different kill shots.
Yeah, he can't.
Because he talks to him. He gives him the,
what are you doing?
What are you doing, man?
Come on, man. What are you doing? We're best friends.
And then, well, he gets the kill shot effectively while he's talking.
And then Fulgrim at this time has two blades. One is the one Ferris gave him.
He's been fighting with the whole time.
But also has a demon blade that he doesn't know is a demon blade, but it's totally
different. Well, when we say demon blade, it is legitimately a weapon that has a warp entity, a demon, a greater demon, mm-hmm. inside of it, a powerful entity. So it is a plus, plus, plus. It's a plus five weapon.
Yeah, plus five vorpal sword. Yeah. And so it's a vorpal sword because that's what it does. The sword itself cuts off Ferris's head.
Well, actually guides his hand.
Yeah, guides his hand.
That's when he begins to be overpowered by it.
And in the book, he even talks about Fulgrim tries to stop it. Yep. Fulgrim doesn't want to kill him, but the blade goes, nah.
Fulgrim is fully convinced to Chaos, but he also doesn't want to kill, again, his best friend. Yeah. The blade also takes him over. But the best part about the blade is you don't know, because they allude to it in the book, but there's a chance that Fulgrim might see that he's wrong right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically seal the deal of him going to Chaos. He is Chaos, but they seal the deal that he has no redemption arc by the sword taking his arm over and literally cutting off Ferris Manus's head.
And then at this moment, Fulgrim is somewhat apoplectic about killing his brother, which then allows the demon to possess his body. Although it's a weird possession. It's not like, well, there's lots of possessions that come up. This was less of a possession, more of an imprisonment. Fulgrim was inside.
The sword.
Yeah, Fulgrim was inside, but the demon now possessed Fulgrim.
Even though Fulgrim said I was totally in charge the entire time.
The Fulgrim marks get a little bit weird. Then he turns into a snake, spoiler alert. But anyway, so now we'll go back to Korax. And because so this is kind of we talk about how, you know, not all the legions get destroyed. So Korax and his buddies in the Raven Guard, they're hiding. And when you run away, you know who likes chasing people who run away?
This psycho.
Angron.
The guy that's in charge of ads.
Yeah.
So no boss battles, just ad kills.
Now, and I'll be honest, if I was fleeing an army, the army with the nails in their skulls who wanted carrying chain swords chasing me seems a lot more intimidating than a lot of the other ones.
Yeah, like they're probably not going to give up any. They looked at their calendar and they said, looks like it's open except for murder.
Yeah, we're partying. So Korax and the Raven Guard are fleeing. They're being chased, and Angron gets them cornered eventually. And they're ready to do this. And out of nowhere, because they're Raven Guard and they are sneaky.
Oh, well, that is a big thing. The Raven Guard's full ability is they are stealth masters. They are forward deploying. They're sitting next to you in the guard post going, I wonder if anybody's going to attack, guys. So these guys are stealth masters. So they are leading them on a merry chase. Also, they are outnumbered, yes, to 50 at this time.
Yeah. And really killed them. But luckily, one of their captains, who came from their homeworld to help out, appears out of nowhere, Raven Guard, and just bombs a bunch of the World Eaters,
does a drive-by, and they all jump on board.
Jump on the ship and peace out off-world. So Korax is very hurt at this point, and he's got like 11 friends. You know, so it's like there's not a lot left, but they're now off world.
He's still not doing as bad as Vulcan did. Vulcan went, hey, I wonder if they've got something they can make more guys on of Terra.
Yeah.
You know, remember when we took a nuke to the face? Yeah, it was sucky.
Kind of all of me. So at this point, Horus is celebrating. Three of the lawyers, legions are effectively destroyed. And Korax is wounded. Ferus Manus is dead. And they believe Vulcan is dead. So he's killed two of the three Primarchs.
That's a big thing on that. They don't actually know that he's eternal at this point.
Yeah, no one does.
I don't actually think he knows.
The Emperor knew.
The Emperor knows.
The Emperor knows. And so they effectively think they've killed two out of three Primarchs, and they eliminated three legions.
Minimal
losses. I mean, the numbers, they vary around a lot because this is a part of the history that's obviously not recorded because you don't write down your losses. But the expectation is that there's less than 100,000. They took less than 100,000 losses, whereas these three legions are gone.
Gone.
So this is a great thing. But now we're going to jump over to Magnus. With what Brad was saying earlier, Horus launches all these traps at the same time. In this way, this is done to just confuse and...
He doesn't want a communication either.
Yeah.
Because if anybody found out Estevan happened, Prospero happened, they would go, oh no, and be prepared for... Yep. So he has them all happen at the same time. So at the same time of this, we go to the Kafkaf stolen Egyptian world of Prospero. And we come down and Leman Russ has been told to... burn this place to the ground.
Well, no, Leman was told, go grab Magnus and bring him back.
Yeah, that's true. My bad. He was told by the Emperor to go grab your brother and bring him back here. Horus said, no, he has really offended the Emperor. You need to murder Magnus and set the planet on fire.
You need to murder Magnus and everyone around him. And so Leman, totally in on this one.
Also, doesn't even like Magnus.
Magnus to start with. Magnus needs to be an ally for Horus or to not exist. Win-win either way. So Leman's on his way. So what happens is, though, the Space Wolves arrive at Prospero to attack. And then Magnus goes, hey guys, I know you're here to grab me. I'm ready to go face my judgment. And Leman Rush just goes, nah, I'm killing everybody.
Yeah. Well, he actually makes an impassioned speech with logic and sense. Leman went, yeah, like, I'm still going to wreck you, bro. Yeah,
we're doing this. And so...
It's like, I don't know what this whole talkie-talkie thing is. Like, we need to move this one along.
Yeah, I brought my whole army with me, and we're going to kind of wipe out your army. And
he doesn't just and the Thousand Sons, he goes buck wild.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He has the Space Wolves go, yeah, if you live on Prospero, you're gone, yo.
One interesting thing I thought about this is that the Thousands are the only Psyker army at this stage. The only one Psyker heavy army. Lehman is not. So he does plan ahead and he brings Sisters of Silence with him because they're blanks, which we'll get into later. But they bring in the ability
to stop
psychic powers, and also brought Custodes with him.
Why
not?
Because when you're going to win, why win by 50 when you can win by 150?
So the Thousands have never had a chance here. I mean, they never had a chance. But it's not helped by the fact that Magnus is just kind of wild.
Oh, he goes full emo.
Yeah, well, he fights. Magnus, eventually, you can only be passive for so long. And the Thousands begin to fight back. They do fight back. They fight back with psychic power. They do all this stuff. But they're losing. And Magnus tells...
Doing that, though, actually... almost was a bad idea because they were originally meh. They weren't super psyched up. As soon as they started using the heresy powers, because the Space Wolves are no bueno about sorcery, all the berserkers.
Not a librarian heavy army.
All the berserkers hit the rage button and double their attacks.
They all come in hard. Magnus realizes what's going to happen. He goes to Ahriman, who comes up much more later, and says, grab everybody, go into the temples and hide the temples. I'm going to go deal with this. And he goes out and meets Lehman Russ in combat. Now, in a sparring session, Lehman Russ would beat the living piss out of Magnus. I mean, in an actual fight where Magnus doesn't really want to fight and Lehman Russ is juiced to the nines.
Ruins his soul.
Literally lifts him in the air and breaks his back over his knee. And then as Magnus is lying there with a broken spine, Lehman comes to kill him. And as he kills him, Magnus decides to join Tzeentch.
He decides to join Tzeentch, and basically time doesn't operate the same way in the warp.
Yeah.
So Magnus, in the time of the killing stroke, has a long conversation with Tzeentch about what's going to happen to my sons, what's going to happen to my planet and everything else. And he says, no problem. I will take care of that. And Prospero, a version of Prospero, I guess, gets teleported into the warp, the eye of terror, the go-between between the warp and the real world. So you have Prospero just chilling out in the eye of terror now.
And as with all deals you make with demon princes,
didn't go well.
Tzeentch said the truth that they all would not die, but their souls of the entire Thousand Sun army and everyone on Prospero now belong to Tzeentch.
Well, we'll go into the Ahriman on that.
Yeah.
The River of Damnation was a whoopsie.
There's also that piece. Magnus, the same time with his broken back and everything else, also. He sells himself out and becomes the second
demon prince
to become a demon prince. So now he's on the traitor side. Horus now, we're at next steps, brings in his buddies. So he's got world eaters, children.
There's 9 and 9 now.
Yeah, 9 and 9, sort of.
Well, yeah, I was saying you've got 9 and. Well, the thing is that to be fair, the traitor legions lost. There's 9 legions, and while, yes, they slaughtered 3 of them, of the others, their legions aren't doing great either because they purged themselves half of each of their legions.
Yeah.
So yes, they have the advantage, but they also have 0.5, 0.5, 0.5 kind of thing coming in because they decimated 50, 60% of their own guys.
And so at this point, Horus has to decide what the next move is. And the next move is... twofold. One, get to Earth. Because as Brad mentioned earlier, we know how many worlds are in the Imperium. We don't know how many of them are going to side with each one, and logistics are a real thing. You don't have a ton of time to wage these wars before you run out of problems.
Yep. You run out of food, you run out of vehicles, you run out of bullets, everything else.
Exactly. And the sitting time is the longer you do it, the longer the Emperor can bring everyone together and have overwhelming force. So what he decides is, I'm sending 5 of you. Sort of. I mean, I'm going to send 5 of you to Mars the sort of is we're going to cover later as far as how it gets there. And then the remaining four are going to wage what are effectively terror campaigns throughout. We're going to just disrupt.
We're going to try to disrupt logistics. We're going to try to get people to come, which actually doesn't work out even remotely. But
not even in the ballpark, but it's fine. Some of this makes sense. Iron Warriors, hey, go attack the Fists. I think they were going to do that, whether you told them to or not.
Night Lords, go harass people. Yeah, they might have been doing that anyways.
Go find random planets and kill people on it for fun. All right. You mean the ones we're
Tuesday?
Already, yeah, the ones we're already on or some new ones? And then the Alpha Legion is kind of, we're going to have to spend a lot of time on them because it really, this is where Brad's commenting about Alpha Legion. We don't really fully grasp what was going on, what wasn't going on with them, but we'll cover it.
They either did terrible or they were still loyal.
But as we're coming to the end of this episode, let's just make sure everyone's following along at home. So Horus, the traitor legions have Horus, the Luna Wolves, Fulgrim, who is now a demon, the Emperor's children, Magnus, who's also a demon with his thousand sons, Petarabo and his Iron Warriors.
But we have to go with Magnus real quick. Magnus currently doesn't have a full real legion, and we'll go into that more in the next episode.
Yeah. Mortarion with his Death Guard, Lorgar with his Word Bearers, Angron, the World Eaters, Conrad Cruz and the Night Lords, and Alpharius Plus with Alpha Legion. He also has Mars and all four Chaos Gods.
Which means that he has, effectively, you can make demonic incursions from the warp as long as you're doing whatever their thing is.
Yep. So he has the warp on his side, actually, on top. So another one. He also has the warp on his side.
Yes. People can't travel.
Yeah. The Empyrean has Rogal Dorn, who's at full strength. Jagadi Khan, who's at full strength.
Well, the thing, biggest thing is Rogal Dorn being in the Terra.
Yep.
You have your literal fortification master at your fortification.
At the place that the enemy's coming.
And also, Terra is a planet-sized fortification. So,
also, the Himalayas.
Yeah.
Leman Russ, he's on his way back after wrecking Magnus. So Leman Russ is also mostly full strength. Then you technically have the Salamanders. We think the Primarch is dead. We don't know how many are left. Gilliman on the Ultramarines, who's I think might be the largest of the armies.
By far, but he's also on the wrong side of the galaxy. Wildly far away because Horus
sent him. We're going to cover some of this stuff in the
video. Horus literally sent people the people that he couldn't kill. He couldn't turn. He said, "Hey, will you go get the snarf on the other side of the universe?" And they were like, "That sounds weird, but whatever."
Yeah, you're in charge. We'll go there. Theris Manus is dead. The Iron Hands are decimated. There's a few left, and then Korax is heavily wounded,
and the Raven Guard are a glee club right now. There's barely anybody left.
They also do have the Adeptus Custodes, though, and they have the Sister Silence, and the most powerful being in the galaxy,
like laughably by
far. Yeah, by far. So that's kind of where we're at. So, as a conclusion, you know, at this stage, the traitors have the upper hand. They outnumber the Space Marines, and they're on the offensive. They've got powerful allies. And one of the biggest things they have going for them is that they're singular in purpose right now. They just want to go conquer. Whereas the Imperium has to govern and defend itself and kill its traitors, which is stretching them a lot thinner. And so our next episode, we're going to cover some of the really cool side stories of the journey to the Gates of Terra by the Traitorous Legions. For those who are new to this whole area has 30, 40 books covering this. So what ends up happening is the first chunk we've covered here is fairly linear. What we're going to end in now is kind of these more non-linear stories of all this then kind of happens at the same time. Because we're talking about a 7-year period, but the universe is 3 dimensions. So things are happening all over the universe.
At the same time.
Once again, I'm John Barsotti. This is Brad Chester.
Scott.
And thank you for listening to the 40K Lorecast.